Mini episode 1610 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1610. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, one of my fellow originals, our senior editor, Jason Jones. A lot of times this time of year, we have on another fellow original, Chris Galloway. This is our NFL draft preview for 2023. Galloway being sidetracked today, unfortunately, a little bit of a home repair crisis where he is at. He has had to spend the better part of the day working on his tractor, of all things, having an issue there. So, regret that we cannot have Chris with us, but I certainly understand, and we will catch him for what will be our post-draft show that we do every year with the three of us. Those are always really great when the three of us get together. We'll have that coming up probably the weekend after the NFL draft. While I'm plugging things, two things here, and one that's going to directly include Jason. One that is more general, sort of, for all of us. Having just launched on the FDH Lounge site as of the last 24 hours, check it out, and you'll find it on the main bar at the top, the FDH Lounge AI Hub, where we have a collection of a lot of the top Twitter threads recently from a lot of experts, an unbelievable amount of AI tools that are now in the hands of average people, and things that we can all go out and do and use that for, and trying to use this as a helpful resource for people and a guide to let everybody know what's out there. And we're summarizing each of these threads and linking to them. Go check it out, the FDH Lounge AI Hub. And then also, more directly with the FDH Lounge here, sort of, if you might term it that way, maybe a little bit of a spinoff, after further review with Jones. So Jason is starting his own project up, and similar to the FDH Lounge, but with the lounge, nothing is off topic. And after further review with Jones, many things are not off topic. But those things, if they include football, basketball, some other sports, some TV and movies and entertainment. And Jason, I'm sure you can explain it probably better than I just did there. But a lot of the topics that we do in the lounge, but, drill down a little bit from that. It's not everything is off topic, but it's still pretty wide out there on some of the different areas that are being covered.
Yeah, it's a little bit more cherry picking, mm-hmm. if I'm honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the big difference is when we were all in house with the FDH Lounge,
mm-hmm.
It was very easy for us to just say, hey, we're going to do a political segment. Let's bring in our political expert.
Yep.
Or we're going to do geopolitical, or we're going to do pop culture, whatever. But we had someone. So in this sense, we're still going to do that. We're still going to be bringing in dignitaries to contribute to certain areas. The difference is, and this comes from mostly from my sports background, and that is there's just certain areas that I'm not as into or mm-hmm. not as well versed in that I'm just going to choose not to really do unless we bring someone in to lead that. It's really just focusing on what I believe I am, best at, and then letting other people fill in the gaps elsewhere. But what you said is pretty good. We're just saying there are two spaces, sports, which is going to be primarily basketball, football, drafts for both, and then some international calendar stuff, right? The Olympics, World Cup, stuff like that that only comes around every so often. And then movies and TVs as we deem necessary within the scope. Now, as we have discussed before, most of the entertainment side will definitely be of the sci-fi, fantasy, sports movies type stuff. If you're expecting, this year's Oscar front runner, probably not going to be that, but if enough people say that we need to jump into that space, we've got dignitaries that can help with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, everybody is just a phone call or a hot tag away, as it were. And, yeah, so it's a very fascinating project. I look forward to participating in it along with the cast of thousands here, and that will be remarkable. One more thing to plug that's coming up before we get started here, and that is draft night. We are going to be doing a project here in some form. As of right now, it actually looks like it's going to be a live stream with our good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, the scout Ken Bex from firstdownscouting.com, tentatively going with a draft night show, in which case streaming us, that's all you need to do. You know, have on ESPN or the NFL Network for the visual, obviously. Turn the sound down, listen to us. That's going to be all you need. Me and Bex are going to have you covered. Going to have reactions coming in from all over the FDH Lounge multiverse. Jason, Chris, everybody else will be texting in their thoughts and getting them in here. Maybe a little bit of audio as we go along as well. So draft night, look for that. We'll be doing that. And again, it will be an unbelievable proceeding here this year. Last year, Jason, we had to go through the monotony of a draft that really didn't have any star quarterback prospects for the first time in a long time. This year, that is not the case. You've got four quarterbacks who are all projected to go pretty high in the first round. You might have one or two of them dipping. The thing that is kind of funny to me is that I was joking about this weeks ago, was that what if Carolina traded up to one but ended up taking Anthony Richardson there, which, you know, in terms of value would have been a horrendous thing to do. He's rising on a lot of boards. I think it's still not a great move value-wise. Now, hey, who knows? It could actually happen. I doubt it, but it could happen. But between C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, you have four guys right there that a lot of NFL teams feel like could be their starting quarterback at a high level going forward. I'd say five if you put Hendon Hooper in the mix, but he's not going to be an immediate guy because of the knee injury.
Yeah, the quarterback situation is really interesting. And just at the top, I've got this broken down into something very, very simple. At the top, maybe it's the hill I'm willing to die on. C.J. Stroud, one. Bryce Young, two. If you don't have a problem with his measurables and drink the Alabama Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't argue with results. The guy makes big plays in big moments. But if you're an NFL GM, 5'10 and 200 pounds and running a 4.7 should be concerning. So I see no scenario where Young goes ahead of Stroud any way, shape, or form. Then, as you mentioned, Anthony Richardson's an interesting case in that I believe the low end is the Trey Lance situation we have currently. He's physically scary looking. When you just watch him work out, you think, yeah, that dude's legit. The problem is his tape doesn't match. There's
right.
Inconsistent play all over the place. Lots of missed throws. So the question is, if you love Anthony Richardson, you better not be parading around like the Titans are right now and thinking that your quarterback you drafted last year is already done because he didn't, you know, wow you. This guy's not going to be ready day one. He's not a day one starter.
No.
But if the long game is what you're interested in, he's a physical freak.
That's true. That's true. And he's a guy where, again, there's a lot of comps out there. It's a little lazy, but there's a lot of comps to Cam Newton. I don't know if I see it or not. I mean, certainly not in terms of the tape. I don't see it yet.
Yeah, I don't see Cam. I wouldn't make that comparison personally.
No.
At the end of the day, though, he's not. I cannot fathom that he's anybody's week one starter.
No.
Now, what's interesting is that seems to be the top tier everyone's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Stroud, Young, Richardson. Some people are trying to put Will Levis in there, and that, I don't know. I don't want to get into a whole thing, but that just feels like the media machine pushing a white guy. Anyway, putting that off onto the back burner, but here's the thing. If you don't get one of those top three, but you're a team that needs a quarterback, I wouldn't bang the table for it, but I would say that Will Levis, Hendon Hooper, Max Duggan, all in the same tier.
Yeah.
So do you reach for a guy like Will Levis and get him, you know, around 10, Or do you say, we're going to do something else, and I'm going to try to trade back in or hope that somebody slides, get a Hooper or Dugan that you can develop for maybe later this year or next year. But, you know, after that, you're starting to get into guys that have a very specific role or probably are career backups. I am not entertaining the Stetson-Bennett Kool-Aid for anybody that wants to go there.
Right.
But, yeah, if you need a quarterback and you're picking in the top 10, fire away. If you need a quarterback and you need him to be an eventual starter, there are guys to be had. You just don't have to pick them in the top 10.
Yeah, and I'm sure I can pretty much hear FDH Lounge dignitary John Adams chastising me now for being a burnt orange homer, or the washed-out orange, the faded-out orange homer. But Hendon Hooper, again, I think he'd be right there at that level if he wasn't hurt right now. He's not going to be an immediate starter because of that. I will say, as far as Stroud goes, I would have had a problem with him at the top of the draft all the way up until the Sugar Bowl, because this is a guy where I just never saw. He was never the reason they lost big games, but he was never the reason they came back and won them, because obviously they didn't. And it's a thing where, in particular, the Michigan game this past season, when they didn't step on Michigan's neck right away, you could feel the butt cheeks clench of him and Ryan Day, and I felt it permeated throughout the entire stadium. And he did not seem like a big game quarterback to me. I think it took being in a situation against Georgia where, at that point, because of their record in big games the last couple of years, there was like a, hey, nothing to lose kind of a circumstance to it. And he was willing to run more, which maybe his willingness to run more helped out as well, because he wasn't much of a voluntary runner under other circumstances. But he looked like a different quarterback. He looked like the guy he's always been billed to be against Georgia in probably the biggest game he's played in thus far. So I was a guy who, I looked at it and I was just like, I hate to say these things about him. He seems like a nice kid. I'm just not seeing it. I'm glad that I can say now that I don't really have those qualms anymore, because I've at least seen him do it on the big stage. He's got to keep repeating it, of course, but at least I've seen him do something I'd never seen him do through any point in his two seasons before.
Yeah, let's be honest. I don't know that even with that, we've actually seen peak Stroud.
Right.
At least that's my hope.
Right.
But when it comes to top quarterback in this draft, the question is, do you take C.J. Stroud, who has shown glimpses of the ability to be that guy,
mm-hmm.
on top of the measurables? Because if we look at Stroud and Young just working out at their pro days, and you don't notice the massive difference in size.
Yep.
One could argue that workout-wise, they look like they're the same tier. So the question then becomes, do you take Bryce Young, who seems to be that guy all the time, but he's 5'10", 5'11", or do you take the guy that maybe isn't the quarterback he's meant to be yet, who's 6'3", 215, and faster? So it really probably comes down to philosophy on this one. Like, are you an analytics guy, or are you an eye test, watch game tape guy? But for me personally, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but maybe it's just Baker Mayfield syndrome. I'm just not crazy about a 5'10" quarterback unless he's, you know, going to be like Pat Mahomes good.
Right.
So I'd be a little nervous about Bryce Young. But if someone takes him number one, if Carolina takes number one, it's not a horrible pick. It's just not the pick I would have made. But, yeah, I think we're all, especially if you watch Ohio State, I think everyone's looking at that prospect and going, please let him be more of a Josh Allen, you know, a guy that has some work to do, and we haven't seen who he is yet.
Yes.
Whereas Bryce Young, I don't want to say he's reached his ceiling, but I think we know who he is.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing, too. Most people tell you, oh, what are you talking about? We've already seen C.J. Stroud's greatness, whatever. And no offense to your Maryland Terrapins, but Maryland, Michigan State, whatever. He's not doing it in the biggest games, and these days there's more of a talent differential than ever between Ohio State and most other teams they play, Jason.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a big difference in the teams you just mentioned and sticking it to Michigan when they're a top 10 team, Penn State when they're ranked high, or God forbid, this is the one that's going to make Ohio State fans cringe, whether it's Stroud or somebody else, they don't have a great track record against the Clemsons, Bamas, LSUs of the world. So we got to hope that he hasn't shown us who he is yet.
Yes. Yes. And I think there is reason to think that and hope that staying in the backfield and with the skill positions here, good old B-Rob from Texas, we were talking about this off air. That's a guy where I look at it in terms of the size and the speed, and I say that's a guy where I wouldn't be afraid to take him in the first round, even though the league is telling you that, you know, never take one in the first round anymore, which I think is reductive completely. But it's interesting that you're occupying kind of a unique space on this one, and a very gutsy space when you're talking about him and the next couple of guys there, and maybe not seeing as much of a break in value as some people might.
Yeah, and that's the part I'm struggling with in this particular draft, is there's always going to be a sense that there's one guy on a tier by himself, and then there's a massive drop-off. Now, I'm not going to try to convince somebody that Robinson isn't the clear-cut number one running back in the class, but I would argue that the gap between 1 and 2, 3, 4, and 5 is not as wide as people think. And the reason I say that, Robinson's really crafty. I love how he can elude tacklers. I love how he can get through the first line of defense. And then once he's in the open field, I don't want to sound like a homer here, but I see a lot of like the Nick Chubb, Austin Eckler vision once they're running, right? So once he's past that first line, yeah, he gets dangerous and you're not going to take him down. But what's interesting is he doesn't have an initial burst, so he's never going to like just blow through the line, which may or may not be an issue. Where this gets interesting, though, Jammer Gibbs, Kendry Miller, Zach Charbonnet, who I have 2, 3, and 4, if, let's say, Robinson is a top 15 pick, based on ability and tape, I think Gibbs, Miller, and Charbonnet all go within the, you know, say, 20 through 50. Now, they probably won't go that way, but just talent-wise, I think they're close enough. Gibbs is much quicker and has that initial burst. Miller is at times, he looks almost like beast mode. Mm-hmm. Like, once he gets going, like, you're not going to take him down with an arm tackle. It's not happening.
Right.
And then Charbonnet is interesting because he's not quick. He's not explosive fast. He's a bigger guy. At least when you're watching him run at 6 foot 215, he looks kind of like an Eddie George type. But what's interesting is he can catch the ball well. And that's where thinking of, like, a tall Eckler kind of makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after that, you know, it's a crapshoot after that. But
yeah,
those top four guys, if you're a team that desperately needs a running back and you're eyeing Robinson and he goes 10 picks ahead of where you're picking, I guess my whole point is don't feel too bad. Don't trade away the farm to move up and get him, because you can get Gibbs or Miller, and they're maybe not Robinson, but they're not terribly far off. So and this is going to be an ongoing theme. We're going to see this in receiver, linebacker, defensive tackle. It's all across this draft.
Yes.
There's one guy you're thinking of, but if you can't get him, the next best thing is not that far away.
Yes. And there are a lot of positions of real depth in this draft. And again, you look at the last decade or so, it's almost a decade now, because the class of 2014, I think it was the best wide receiver class, we were saying at the time, since like 96.
That was 10 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, nine years ago. Hard to believe. But it's just
feels
been,
like it was three.
It had been 18 years since we had a class like that one, 96 to 2014. And it's been wave after wave after wave since then, Jason. And another one this year. It never stops. This is the golden age of wide receivers. We talk about it in the fall in terms of fantasy, as far as, you know, that you can wait for a lot of the top guys to fall to you. Maybe not so much a Justin Jefferson or whatever. There's guys worth taking very early. But every year you just keep getting crops like this to keep coming into the league and replenishing it and letting there be such a timeless sort of depth pool in the NFL. The golden age of wide receivers, and that golden age is just going to shine even brighter after this draft.
Yeah, no, I like receiver. I do have to give you one fun little brain fart story I think you're going to laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
I had looked through about, and this was, you know, 2 months ago, but I was looking through all these, you know, celebrity mocks, and I'm sitting here going, why is everybody forgetting somebody? And why is Njigba so high?
Right.
And you know what I was missing? I had convinced my own brain that Marvin Harrison Jr. was eligible.
Oh, okay.
Could you imagine this class if he was? Anyway, putting that aside, to me, it's Johnson and Njigba at the top, and really flip a coin. They're stylistically a little different, but I don't think you can go wrong either way. I think both of them are absolutely projected being a wide receiver one in the NFL at some point. But where it gets interesting is, and we're seeing this more and more, as you mentioned, and just wave and wave of these good receiver classes, the notion that you need a 6'3", 220-pound receiver that only will run deep routes and run sub 4.4 does not exist anymore.
Right.
You don't have to do that because offenses are different now and guys are finding ways to get open using different frames and different speeds, which introduces our favorite transfer story, Jordan Addison, who was, you know, a household name at Pitt and then left to go to USC. And unless you watch a lot of USC, probably was a ho-hum headline. But he seems to be the de facto third receiver in this group. Then my big pound the table moment, which I'm sure you're not going to have a problem with, is Jalin Hyatt. I am seeing an alarming amount of people who think that he is a second or third round pick. And that is driving me nuts. Keep Jalin Hyatt in your top five. I do not expect him to be on the board after pick 50.
Right.
Then along with Jordan Addison, you got Zay Flowers out of Boston College, another short guy, but real shifty, really great after the catch. And here's where this, to reinforce your point about these waves of receiver classes, without listing every single name, I think we get to about 17 before I start getting nervous about how good or not the receiver class is.
Yeah.
17.
Yeah.
That means literally half of the first round could just go receiver, right?
Yep.
The half the round could be receivers, and I would go, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, now, obviously, you know, if we're looking at this, I love Jalin Hyatt way more than I like Tyler Scott from Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
or Kayshawn, I can't pronounce his name, I'm Cajun, I'm sure, Bouillette or Boot.
Yeah.
From LSU. Like, there is a pecking order, but if the guy you wanted is gone and you wait around and go and grab one of these other guys, instead of getting the fifth best receiver, you're getting the 11th best receiver, you're going to be in good shape. This is definitely a draft, even at skill positions, where you can say, I'd like to get the guy now, but if my guy's gone, I'm not screwing myself by going another route and waiting around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, it is a lot of depth, as always. Now, Smith and Jigma is a guy where, again, I understand your sense, particularly if you had momentarily forgotten that Harrison Jr. is not in this draft, but that's a guy a lot of people were saying before the season, I think, almost consensus top 10. Just the fact that he's a guy who looks like he's going to go a little later in the first round. This past year of, like, one thing after another with this guy, that is going to cost him some first-round money, I think.
Well, yeah. I don't think he's going to go as high as he should.
Right.
But I think what we're talking about is I don't think the first receiver is going soon. I think he's going probably top 10. But after that, I think it's going to be the product of teams need other things,
mm-hmm.
right? It's going to be a lot of, you know, corners and defensive tackles. There might be a few linebackers. And obviously, I think we're going to see at least four quarterbacks. So when you're watching the draft and Njigba doesn't go in the top 10, while there were some things that we could point to, I don't think that his draft location will have as much to do with something he has done or not done as it does appeal more to teams are putting a priority on other positions, especially because of these waves of receivers. Because, I mean, last year, what, the two boys from Ohio State were, what, 1 and 2?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to make it an Ohio State thing. I'm saying when we did that draft,
yeah,
I think everyone was thinking Garrett over Olave.
Right.
But at the same time, we were going, yeah, but Olave's no slouch. Olave's legit.
Right.
So you're getting year after year after year of guys stocking up on receiver and finding that they don't have to be a prototype. So there's probably just not going to be as much of a need. Now, there's going to probably come a point somewhere in that top 50 where we're going to see a run on them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think that if Njigba goes, let's say Njigba goes 18th or something, I don't know that that's necessarily an indictment on him. I just think that's just the nature of how the draft fell.
Right.
Although, like I said, there are things we can point to.
Yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he opt out of a bowl game or something?
Yes, he did. And
okay, yeah, that's never going to go well.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, here's the whole thing. It's rare to opt out of a playoff game. It wasn't just like, oh, they're in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, it's not like it was the M&T Bank Bowl.
Right. Yeah, and that's the whole thing, too. And I think that's one of those things that caused people to scratch their heads and go WTF when it comes to him. Looking at the offensive line, it seems like it's stronger on the outside and in the very middle than at the guards here. It seems to be a pretty decent crop at offensive tackle. Crop. Center is never like the deepest thing in the world, let's be honest, but by center standards, it seems pretty good. I'm not as enamored with the guard crop, though.
Yeah, I mean, this is a solid take. What's going to be interesting is, what does Skoronski play? Because right now, he's projected as a tackle, but I've seen some concerns about his arm length. So if he plays tackle, then I'm absolutely completely on board with what you're saying. Because when we look at the guards, and we take him off the board, the first guy that looks to go at exclusively guard might not be until the middle of the second round. So there's absolutely truth to the fact that there's not a ton of guards. You're not going to see, I'm forgetting his name, but the kid that went really high to Indianapolis. There is no guard in this draft that you're going to look at and say it's worth a top 15 pick. There just isn't. Now, what's interesting is on the tackle side, you know, we're talking about going 10 deep inside of the first 60 picks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's something to be said there. I personally, because of the fact that there's some question marks about Skoronski, I badly want to put Paris Johnson in the top spot.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the only, like, not to reuse the word, but the only prototype, bookend, left tackle type that I think we have here. But the top 10 tackles are probably all projecting to be starters at some point. So I would definitely agree that tackle is better, and there's a couple nice guys at center, but, you know, center is one of those positions. You can draft a guy at 15, or you can draft a guy in the fifth, and who knows which is going to work out better.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not the strongest offensive line draft, but there are teams in desperate need, so I do think you're going to see a bunch of tackles taken probably sooner than they should. And then at some point in round two and three, we're probably going to see a run on guards, but as you mentioned, they're not going to wow anybody.
No, I don't think they're going to. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, a lot of these guys are going to be hard-pressed to keep up with the talent coming in and the trenches on the other side, because to me, this is a great defensive tackle crop. It's the only one I would say, maybe out of all the draft classifications, I'd say great. I'd say very good in looking at the defensive ends also. Defensive line talent as a whole looks to be a big, big, big strength of this draft, Jason.
Yeah. I was obviously very selfishly looking at defensive tackle before free agency started. And let's address the elephant in the room. If not for legal issues, which I guess he's been absolved of, plus the fact that he has basically refused to speak to any team at all, Jalen Carter would be a top five pick in most drafts. Like, he's scary good. But because of all that stuff, I can't really feel comfortable in pegging where he should go. But then after that, if that's the guy you're focusing on, and he goes right before you pick, you still got Mazi Smith from Michigan, who some people think is not a three-down player, but for those first two downs, who cares? That dude gets penetration. Kalijah Kancey from Pitt. I don't want to make the Pitt people are talking about him like he's Aaron Donald 2.0, and I wouldn't go that far. just because he's a pit player who plays defensive tackle does not make him Aaron Donald. But I really do like him. I think he's really solid. I think he'd be great at the top half of the second. But then you're still getting Brian Breese from Clemson, Siaki Ika from Baylor, who is maybe the only legitimate nose in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
But then even still, the Pickens from South Carolina, Young from Bama, I mean, you're probably, like the receivers, you're probably going about 10 to 15 deep before you start scratching your head. So defensive tackle is really nice. Now, the area that I'm a little concerned with is if it were up to me, we would not consider Will Anderson from Alabama a defensive end. We would be talking about him as an outside linebacker or something else. Now, after that, Tyree Wilson, Miles Murphy, Will McDonald, Will McDonald also lists as a defensive end. I think he's more ideally suited to be an outside linebacker, just like Nolan Smith from Georgia. But the point to be made here is, again, you're going, good grief, another 15 deep on defensive end that all probably project to being starters on some capacity. So, again, you don't have to have Will Anderson unless he fits your scheme. But after Will Anderson, you got another, 14 guys that legitimately look like they can get pressure.
Right. It is just, it's remarkable. The quarterbacks are going to be in unprecedented peril this fall, Jason, with a lot of the guys coming in here. And, again, it depends on, as you and I have discussed here, whether or not you consider Will Anderson a defensive end or an outside linebacker. That's a thing where obviously it would juice up the outside linebacker pool here, which presently at this point I regard as being pretty good. But obviously if you put him in the class there, and you've made the case that he should probably better be classified as that. Outside linebackers I've got as being good. Not impressed by the inside linebackers, and that's even by the standard that, again, it's hard to come by ones that are usually, draft crops that are that deep. And inside linebacker, it's kind of like fullback or kicker, for the most part, where you're not going to get a whole lot of guys that are, like, really, really wowing you. But even by those standards, inside linebacker doesn't seem that great to me. Outside linebacker, I think, is pretty good. And, again, much better if Will Anderson is one of them.
Yeah, inside linebacker is the absolute inverse of everything we've been talking about right now. outside linebacker, defensive end, defensive tackle, wide receiver, all go 15 to 20 deep.
Mm-hmm.
Inside linebacker, and I don't want to sound picky, and I don't want to, rain on the parade of fans of everybody else. But to me, if you need, emphasis on need, an inside linebacker, yeah, you better get one or two. One is Jack Campbell out of Iowa, and he's a little bigger than you would expect for someone in today's NFL linebacker dynamic at 6'5", 250. But he's, and this is going to sound like a stretch, and I'm not saying one is the other. I'm saying there are moments where they remind me of each other. He has Keekly-like versatility.
Okay, wow.
Like, he'll go and thump a quarterback if he doesn't notice that he's barreling down on him. But he's also good in coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think he's an all-time guy like Keekly was, but I think he's nice. And then the only other guy, and my apologies in advance, I still have not quite learned the pattern of how you pronounce these things. So I'm going to butcher this, and I apologize in advance. Henry To'o out of Alabama.
Close enough.
He's... Not to be too selfish here, but he does feel a little like a Sione Takitaki.
Okay.
Where he's good, but his ceiling comes before great. So he's not the kind of guy you're going to draft and expect to be the next Ray Lewis. However, in a good scheme where you're getting pressure from your pass rushers or you're locking down the back end, he can be very effective. After that, there's not a single inside linebacker that I watched that I'm, quote, impressed by.
Right.
So in my opinion, this is the opposite. This is, if you got to get your guy, reach on Jack Campbell, reach on To'o, or just get a guy in the third, fourth, fifth round, because at that point, they're all the same anyway.
Yes, absolutely. And There's a little bit of bifurcation, I think, as well here when you're looking at cornerback, which, again, I would say, yeah, it's a good class there. But I don't think there's much to write home about when it comes to the safeties in this draft, Jason Jones. The defensive backs, it's really split between the two.
Yeah, normally you'd like to come into a draft thinking there are about 5 to 10 legitimate starting corners, but that you're also getting 5 or 6 really, really solid safeties. There's a few in here that I like. I don't love any of them. Every single safety on this list has something they're not great at.
Right.
But Branch out of Alabama is going to lead that off. Cartavius Quan Martin, if I ever have a chance to meet this individual, I'm going to ask him to his face where Quan came from, and it better not be Jerry Maguire. Cameron Mitchell, once you get to about 4 on the safeties, I start wondering how invested we are in making this pick, like, in general. Whereas, when we look at corner, I think you're still getting, you know, a good 7 that are pretty impressive. I like Christian Gonzalez a lot. He reminds me, at times, of... Who's the guy you just got at the Dolphins?
Oh.
Just traded for somebody.
Oh, yeah. Putting me on the spot here.
Jalen Ramsey.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Christian Gonzalez has a little Jalen Ramsey in him.
Okay.
Joey Porter Jr., believe me, I wanted him to be a bust.
Mm-hmm.
I just...
We all did. We all did.
I don't like his dad enough. I don't like his dad enough to want him to not be good. But he's solid. He's one of these corners that's physical, not afraid to mix it up. He is big. I think, and this conversation came up in a conversation about a specific NFL team's personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, and you'll know what I'm getting at. We're just going to breeze right past it. You have a team that has what is thought of to have 3 starting level corners. One of those played a decent amount of slot last year and was a little vocal about not wanting to play the slot.
Mm-hmm.
Joey Porter Jr. to me is the perfect case study for this concept where slot corners and island corners are not the same thing. They might as well be a completely different position. Because really what you want in a slot corner is a linebacker who has corner tendencies or corner abilities. And Joey Porter, I swear you could put him right up on the line and just bump and run all day long. And I feel like he'd do really, really well. But then after that, Devin Witherspoon from Illinois is nice, but he's not a shutdown. And I think that's what you got to think about is the days of Champ Bailey or Darrell Revis, I don't think we're really in that space anymore. You got to find guys that do certain things well and put them in the scheme appropriately. So we're not going to see 5 shutdown corners in this draft, but you are going to see about 10 guys that are pretty solid.
Right.
But to your point, I would... If you're going into your meeting to get ready for the draft and your D coordinator says, I need a defensive back, the very next thought in your brain is you're probably thinking, I hope you mean corner because I don't know how excited I am to spend draft capital on, you know, like the 12th best safety. So it's a very interesting draft because most of these positions are deep, but not at the elite high end. And I think you get that in corner. And again, I don't want to, you know, poo-poo the safety group, but I would not be shocked at all if we only saw 3 corners go in the first 2 rounds. Or, I'm sorry, 3 safeties go in the first 2 rounds.
I think that's a good over-under to have a target. And in terms of cornerbacks here, teams that need safeties, as the draft gets to the middle and the late rounds, I think you're more likely to see teams looking at the cornerback board and looking for what guys might be convertible at that point rather than looking at the best available safeties because, again, it's not a great crop at all.
Oh, you make a great point because right as I'm looking at it, right after the tier break,
mm-hmm.
where everything kind of drops off,
mm-hmm.
you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 9 corners that register at 6'2 or taller who don't have eye-opening 40 times.
Yeah.
And that is the beginning of seeing if you can have a guy sort of turn into a Derwin James. type. Yeah. You know, someone that's big, long, can hit, but maybe whose cover skills aren't as ideal as you would want for a cornerback one or two.
Yeah.
But no, there's definitely some room to entertain that idea for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the guys that jumps out at me here, just looking at the measurables, Jalen Jones, Texas A&M. I mean, he's got, when you're talking about the physical stature and the fact that the 40 time is a little bit kind of less, yeah, that's a guy where, again, I confess to not having seen much tape on the kid, but on paper, that's the kind of guy you're talking about, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, these, when you watch one tape, you get sort of impression. There's certain guys that are just in the receiver's hip pocket the entire time,
mm-hmm.
You know, who are getting their hand on the ball to pick, right, to
yep.
get the interception. And then you have guys who are scrappy, who always seem to be around the ball, but it's always a deflection, or they're hitting the guy out of bounds or something. And it just, you can just look at him and go, are you really a corner?
Right.
You feel like you're a safety.
Right. That's a good point. And we're going to definitely see some of these guys, I think, getting moved to safety because of the weakness of this year's safety crop.
To,
no question.
To your, further to your point here, we I just mentioned, where'd you go? Quan.
Yeah.
Jartavius Quan Martin out of Illinois literally ranks as the 10th best corner, but I also have him as the second best safety.
Right.
And that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yes, yes. I think sometimes you can see it reflected there in the rankings. By the way, and I was derelict in not mentioning this before and plugging other things, coming up in the days before the draft, so not at the time you hear this show, but not super long thereafter, 2023 Pro Football Draftology, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com and powered by the positional rankings and evaluations of you, Jason Jones. And this is reflective of a lot of hard work on your part going through and breaking this down position by position.
Yeah, it's always one of the fun things I get to do because we go through, just as fans, you know, you hear when, I don't even want to say his name, so I won't, the guy at ESPN is always pushing. and then his sort of adversary. Those two guys start cranking out mocks. And obviously, as fans, we're going to watch it and see what's going on, see what they're saying. But this is always fun because I get to go through and, like, throw that away and just kind of watch and then sort of start to move guys around. And then later we go back, and normally we do this almost every year, and we look at their, at least I do, look at their last mocks and go, what are you guys doing? And then sure enough, if I may toot our own horn, so to speak, I think we stopped keeping track of it, but for a long stretch there, I think it was like 12 years in a row, I was better than them by a small margin, and you were better than them by a large margin. Mm-hmm. So, long way of me saying, you don't need to go to the worldwide leader or the big network to get some semblance of understanding of this. You can go check out Draftology, get the entire document, and then when you go to watch the draft, when the pundits on TV are, you know, pulling the, you know, I just watched Draft Day the other day, uh-huh. just for the heck of it, and you and I have talked about how much is wrong with that movie.
Right.
You know, at one point, you're watching Gruden go on and on about why they didn't pick Bo Callahan.
Uh-huh.
Right? And the whole point is the viewers know exactly why they didn't pull, they didn't make that pick. But while you're watching the real draft and their pundits are scratching their head talking about, oh, I wonder why, you know, Will Levis is still on the board, or I wonder why this guy fell or this guy went early. If you're looking at our stuff, you're not going to be scratching your head as much.
Mm-hmm. That is true. That is true. We're going to give you the level of understanding that you need. And along those lines, anything else that we hadn't covered with this draft yet that is on your mind, Jason?
I've got some guys that I like, but that aren't necessarily going to be big surprises or anything. So just to throw some names out, we covered quarterback pretty well. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, again, for selfish reasons, is someone that intrigues me, but he's not starting for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Kendry Miller from TCU, running back, and Zach Charbonnet, those are the big ones. that I think just aren't getting any run right now. And then, is it me or is Cincinnati just starting to invent possession receivers? Because they got another one in there I like a lot.
Yeah.
Tyler Scott. Sorry?
Yeah, they definitely are. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I feel like at least the last three drafts, there's been some Cincinnati receiver that is in that sort of, you know, top 75 where you go, man, really? But this will be like I said, like the third year in a row. And I'm not saying they're possession receiver you yet, but they got something going on with that passing game over there. And then if we get, there's just nothing to get excited about in tight end. As we mentioned, there's some guys that maybe are tackles that project to being guards in the NFL that might change things.
Mm-hmm.
But really where it's, I guess, the most exciting for me when you start talking those middle rounds is, again, bargain defensive tackles. You're going to get somebody in the middle rounds that shouldn't be there. You're going to have some defensive ends, again, you know, third, fourth round. They're going to be surprisingly good. Once they get their footing in the NFL. And then there's we could do an entire show on just name humor.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to mention, if I could be so selfish, though, a guy I will be very excited to see where he goes.
Go for it.
And only because this is opening the door to something else. Auburn Miller. Not a name a lot of people are talking about.
Uh-huh.
However, it's the highest rated Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, Jackson State player to be projected for the draft.
Right.
So, based on where he goes, would be very interesting. I do think he has a very specific skill set. He's not necessarily going to be a sideline-to-sideline guy. But that's going to be step one. Because after everything I'm looking at on what he's doing at CU right now, I think we're going to be no more than 3 years away from having, you know, 5 to 10, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, CU buffs going in the top 100.
Wow. Okay.
And this is kind of digging really deep into the CU covers that I am doing and plan to do with the channel. But everybody knows Cormani McClain. Everybody knows, drawing a blank again, the other corner that he got that was a big deal at Jackson State.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the players he's been pulling in this offseason,
yeah,
especially Horn Jr.,
yep,
who's a little shifty. I'm watching him on, you know, obviously Deion's kid has a platform, and they're showing you a little bit more inside practice and all that than you get from almost any program in the country. But I'm watching this guy run routes, I'm watching him work, and I'm telling you right now, he's a pro today.
Right.
I'm not saying he's a first-round pick. He's still got some college to play, but I'm telling you, that guy's going to be a first-rounder. Shador Sanders will probably get drafted higher than he should.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple linebackers really nice. The tight end, who came from somewhere in the South, can't remember where, but it was a smaller school. That dude looks like a machine.
He's
kind of looks like a smaller Darren Waller when Darren Waller is really good.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Auburn Miller is interesting to me only because he's the first sort of Coach Prime player that might get drafted. Now, mm-hmm. I've got it projected somewhere like sixth round and beyond, but still, I think, and this is all just part of my enthusiasm for CU above every other program in the country right now. What's going on there is very exciting. And we just have to see if all of the coaching hype translates.
Yes.
Because they've got talent. They've got players. So the question is, can they put it together, and how fast can they put it together? Because I've been the obnoxious Colorado resident that's saying, you know, 9 games is the floor.
Okay.
Now, yes, feel free. Go right ahead. Because in any other context, there's no scenario, no precedent that even exists that would make any sense of a coach from a non, let's say, Power 5, just to keep it clean, a non-Power 5 school goes to a Power 5 school and then is bowl eligible season one. That's unheard of.
Sure.
That's absolutely unheard of. The difference is Deion's a celebrity.
Okay.
And he's getting players that he should not be able to get if he wasn't Deion Sanders. So, you know, you have an all-time Hall of Fame greatest ever walks into some kid's house and says, are you going to go coach, go play for, you know, Saban, or you want to come coach for me? Okay. He's got an edge that other recruiters just don't have.
Okay.
So I'm optimistic. I'm rooting for Coach Prime chaos, and it all begins with Auburn Miller. Now, I could be wrong and fall flat on my face with this take, but, you know, for now, I'm hoping for absolute chaos. I hope that they just pistol whip USC and just have everybody just confused.
Well, yeah. And then
USC just being the first big Power 5 school that's not, you know, Nebraska that they play.
And in what I think is the last year of USC and UCLA being in the Pac-12.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah. Strike while the iron's hot, because pretty right. soon the Pac-12 is going to be like Oregon, CU, and like Arizona State or something.
In other words, Conference USA.
Oh, they are? Okay. So, yeah, this notion that the Pac-12 is this, like, stacked conference where it's, like, SEC West. It's, yeah, that's going to end abruptly.
Right.
And hopefully CU just runs that conference. But, yeah, they need to make some noise right now. And if they can get bowl eligible, the 2024 recruiting class is going to be insane.
Yeah. That is going to be something to look forward to. So we have just plugged our draft coverage here for the next several years.
I just spent eight minutes talking about CU.
We're promoting the time to come here. People should listen to us not just this time around, but subsequent times. Jason, you're planting a seed for that, and people can take that as it comes here. So, of course, have that to look forward to. Subsequent drafts, but more near to now, of course. The After Further Review with Jones Brand. Check that out coming to YouTube here with a lot of football coverage, among other things. Of course, Pro Football Draftology 2023 available on the main page at FantasyDraftHelp.com very shortly. So, and of course, Draft Night, looking to co-produce here. Official word yet to come, but looking to do a live cast with Ken Becks, our good pal, the scout, from firstdownscouting.com. Jason, thank you for being here and being the backbone of our NFL draft coverage, as always. Sorry that Chris Galloway was unable to join me as your fellow sidekick here for this thing, but I think he'll be back on for the post-draft version of it here. And thank you for all that you do in keeping our draft coverage utterly without peer.
Absolutely. And I just want to echo that everyone that has the time and availability to do so definitely needs to check out that live stream on draft day. And one quick tidbit for those that are not familiar with Ken Becks. Ken Becks is a name that hopefully you'll get to know, because one fun story I love telling everybody, we were doing a live radio broadcast once upon a time, and this guy just was just banging the table for Jamal Charles when nobody thought Jamal Charles should go north of the fifth round.
Yep.
And he kept saying every single GM will rue the day that they don't pick this guy in the top 50. He ended up going in the second round, and short of injuries, could quite possibly have been one of those, you know, top 20 running backs of all time. And it's a person that even the quote experts had no idea about.
Yeah.
So Ken Becks is legit. Definitely tune into that. And hopefully we'll get, we'll have more to come on draft coverage and his prognostications of where these guys should go, whether they will or not. But yeah, it's definitely something everyone's going to want to tune into.
Absolutely, yes. And Ken Becks, truly one of the greats of the game. Looking forward to working with him. We've been doing so, going back to the old Sports Talk Network days with him. Thank you again, Jason Jones, for all the great coverage here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1610.